come together.
Thanks for listening to the KC Morning Show.
Welcome back.
It's Monday.
Good morning, America.
Good morning, America.
Good morning, America.
Good morning, America.
Happy Veterans Day.
Veterans Day is about every service and every branch.
Thank you for your service.
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 Especially all of our veterans. Thank you.
Thank you for all that you've done.
We salute you.
Enjoy your day.
You earned it.
It's showtime.
Everything's running smoothly.
Yo! What is going on, Kansas City? My name's Hartzell. This right here, it is your KC Moaning Show. What's the word? In fact, how have you been, my friends? It's been a second. Your boy was working. Picked up some contracts. Did some politicking. Bills must be paid, my friends. And concert tickets don't pay rent. But that was then. And this is now. We back, baby. On the show today, we are going to hear from Patrick Mahomes following that incredible game yesterday. Block that kick, baby. Just like we planned it. Also on the show today, it is, after all, Veterans Day. So thank you to all of our vets. We're going to be joined by Pistol, a.k.a. Tanner Rendells, and Sapper, John Tice. Pilots with the 303rd Fighter Squadron. We did this right after the withdrawal from Afghanistan. So had a lot of thoughts, and it was honestly pretty great. But before we get to that, I do have some things that I want to get off my chest.
In other news, this city needs its news.
News team, assemble!
Haven't gotten a chance to speak on the record since Election Day. Boy, was that something, yeah? You know what? Let's do this first. This is from friend of the show and also just friend, Senator Nina Turner. This is what she had to say.
Well, I'm old enough to remember how the Democratic Party wanted to paint felons as somehow a bad thing. People shouldn't have a second chance because they're trying to get at Trump. Meanwhile, back in the hoods, when you do that, you hurt black men, you hurt other men of color, and you hurt poor people writ large. And what this young man said to me, and he was in his 30s, he said, I do not see myself in the Democratic Party.
How did this happen, right? That's the question. In 2020, Biden won. Folks making less than $100,000, he won it handily. And this year, that completely flipped. Harris had more votes for people making over 100K, and Trump won the working class. Trump won folks making less than 100K. That sentence just, I can't believe I said that. Unreal. And like just seeing the Democratic Party just lay blame on everybody but themselves. Blaming the left, even though Kamala ran as a Republican light. Blaming trans people, which is just unbelievable. Blaming pronouns. What a joke. Every single one of these bums need to be fired. Every consultant who got paid. Every leader of the party going, gone. Get the hell out. We can't stew in the cynicism, y'all. We can't stew in the insanity. I know it sucks, but we can't quit now. The work always continues. 10 toes down in the trenches. Election Day is just a day. It's just one item in our tool belt. So this is what I've got so far. It's like 44 pages, but I'm just going to read like the first intro. It's got a lot of policy stuff in it, but the flowery intro. Let me read that to you real quick. Friends and fellow patriots, we fight for the American promise. A new gilded age of corporatism and religious fundamentalism is no longer at our doorstep. It is seated at the head of the table. The right has declared war on our very future. Our society teeters on the edge of collapse. The climate crisis remains an existential threat to our very existence. Wealth inequality widens. Corporate greed tightens its grip on a future that was supposed to be inalienably endowed unto us. We the people, we refuse to sit idly by as party elites, corporate lobbyists, bought and paid for politicians, as they protect the failed institutions and prejudiced systems that continue to betray us to this day. But dreamers of a better tomorrow, our time is now. The Republican Party is rife with reactionaries and corporate oligarchs that seek to drag us back into a dark age of bigotry, repression, and disenfranchisement. They fan the flames of hatred and fear, attacking the rights of women, minorities, LGBTQ plus folks, workers, immigrants, students. They do all that while pillaging our environment and prioritizing profit over people. Bullshit. We refuse to be sacrificed on the altar of theocracy and greed. Our generation, we're not going to be silent. It is time for a youth-led rebellion, a popular front of young progressives ready to dismantle the engines of oppression and build a more perfect union of prosperity and liberation. Corporate interests, they would have us chained to the past. But we fight for our collective future. We're bold, we're fearless, because we know that real power, y'all, it resides with the people. The GOP serves billionaires and fossil fuel barons, trust fund Nepo babies, Christian nationalists, and white supremacists. We fight for each other. Friends, there has been an awakening. From our schools and streets, workplaces, union halls, community centers, church pews, city streets, picket lines, together we can form a united, popular front strong enough to dismantle the corporate consolidation of power and create a society that truly cares for the people. That sounds nice, don't it? The time for half measures, it is over. A reactionary Republican Party will not stop unless we stop them. Their vision for the future is one of fascism and fear, where an elite few rule with an iron fist over the lives of the many. But see, our collective vision, our future is rooted in the story of the American promise. That goes back to day one, Declaration of Independence, a radical, progressive vision of what it truly means to be free and how we are supposed to take hold of those freedoms to form our more perfect union. And make no mistake, y'all, this is not a call for resistance. This is a call for revolution. It is time to rise, organize, and fight back against a revisionist Republican Party that wants us to believe that we're powerless, that we're alone. But in their hubris, they forget their greatest weakness, that we are the many and they are the few. Y'all, we got the power to create a truly progressive future. And if you believe in that promise, friends, a better world is so possible. And with that, my friends, rate, review, subscribe, do that thing you do. Tell your friends about us. It is a good day to be a Kansas Cityan. My name's Hartzell. We will see you in the morning. Bye.
Going straight to one place, right to Kansas City.
The KC Morning Show.
I want to say thank you for everything you do. Thank you for your service. But also, I want to hear about just how you're doing. I don't want to get into strategy. I want to get into the you of it all. How are we processing all this stuff? Pistols, let's go first.
You know, I think it's hard, regardless of where your stance is on anything. Human beings' lives are worth something. And so anytime we start losing human beings, regardless of what part of the world you're in, that's hard. That should be hard for everybody. So it's tough. It losing Americans downrange is tough for anybody. But we're there to do a job, and they're getting the job done. So very thankful to the men and women who are over there serving right now and are getting it done. And our thoughts and prayers and hearts are all with them. And I would be there right now if asked to go. I told my commander that the other day. My bags are packed, and it's nothing more than ready to go serve country and serve others. And that's a no bullshit. answer. I mean, that's just what we signed up to do, and that's our heart. So it's hard because your heart hurts. There's a job to do, and they're doing it. So that's kind of where I'm at with it right now, I think.
I think I'm hurting. I was doing okay up until the big attack, and then I saw pictures of the kids, and that's really, I mean, they're kids. And anytime you lose a guy on the ground, it's hard because we understand that that's what they signed up for. I mean, for the lack of a better term, you know, we all signed up to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and to give our life if need be. But it doesn't mean that it's easy. It doesn't mean that it ever gets easier. It doesn't mean that it isn't frustrating. And yeah, Pistol's been over there twice.
Yep.
I've been over there five times at this point. And I mean, would I go back if they needed it? Yeah, sure. I think we'd all go back.
Even in these answers, fellas, I'm listening to you. I'm asking about you all. How are you all doing? And still the first thing that you go to is, let me go help somebody else. How did y'all get here? What's your story?
I grew up in Northeast Arkansas, about an hour and a half away from Memphis, to the northwest, a little town called Jonesboro. And my dad was a former Air Force guy that had then transitioned over and just fell into an active Guard Reserve spot with the Army. and this was right after Vietnam. And, you know, he'd gone to Korea, lived through the Tet Offensive. He's going through basic training, going to be an air traffic controller, and they walk in and say, congratulations, gentlemen, you're all now security forces. And my dad's like, no, I am going to air traffic control school. And they said, yeah, Tet Offensive, et cetera, you are now all reclassed as security forces, congratulations. And so, long story long, he falls into this Army job, marries my mom, and then I come along 3 years later, and all I ever knew was the military. And for whatever reason, my dad thought it was a great idea to show me Top Gun when I was probably 6-7 years old at most. Top Gun, Iron Eagle, Flight of the Intruder, Firebirds, I can go on. I just always wanted to do it. I don't know why. And I mean, to not get too long into it, my dad was it. My family and my grandpa was in World War II. Both my uncles were in the Vietnam era. Cousins, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Did you feel like you actually had a choice, or you just knew point?
My dad couldn't stand it. My dad, he wanted me to be anything but military, just because, you know, after you've done it for so long, you see the pitfalls that it can have. And I mean, there are dangerous things that we do. And dad, just like you want for your kids, he wanted me to be a doctor and go do that. And I went to jump school in 2002 at Fort Benning, Georgia. And on my first jump out of an airplane, I thought to myself, that is the coolest thing I've ever done. I want to do this forever.
Mine's different. I think I saw the Thunderbirds when I was like 4 or 5, Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix, and that was it. I was like, that's what I want to do. So I started flying when I was 17, got a job in an airport, paid to get my private pilot's license. Wanted to do the military thing my whole life. Had a momentary lapse in judgment in my early 20s and made some bad decisions, so I had to rebound back from that. And that took a little bit of time, but went back to school. Got a degree in aviation, kept flying. Was trying to get on with the Air Force in 2008-9-ish. Pipeline for pilots was kind of closing down. Somebody introduced me to this reserve mentality or idea of being a fighter pilot. As far as being an A-10 guy, I always wanted to be a fighter pilot. To be open and honest, I believe on the calling of people's lives. And I think that everybody has a specific calling and what they're supposed to do. And so we always say the A-10, you don't pick the A-10, the A-10 picks you. Fighter pilots across the board, each one, they're a different culture, they're different expertise in each specific area. And so they're all kick-ass. They all work their ass off to be the best that they can be at what they do. A-10 guys, we obviously are focused on the ground. And so that mission of close air support and it being about the dude on the ground was very appealing to me. And I used to go out to the golf course and sit there and watch the A-10s fly. Well, those A-10s that were flying is the unit that I'm in now. So I got to grow up as a kid looking at those jets going, I want to go do that. And, you know, fast forward, now I'm sitting in those same jets getting to fly them.
I would say for me, like starting out as a young enlisted guy, going through being an NCO, an officer in another branch, coming over, it was all kind of a weird way to get here. Everybody has their own reason. You grew up in a military family, whether you were in a bad situation. And I mean, I had days where I was doing like what we called front back goes. And, you know, that was like CrossFit before CrossFit was CrossFit. You know, like I think that most folks, when they really look back at it, and me specifically, I don't regret my decision. Kind of like Pistol said earlier, my calling was I wanted to fly airplanes. And my way to get there was to join the Army, hopefully fly helicopters. And then at a certain point, the door opened, kind of. I had to kick it open, but it was a, there's an opportunity to switch over to the Air Force. Do you want to do it? Absolutely. Heck yeah. This is what I always wanted to do. So for me, when I look back and I think about the 23 years of my career, my first career, let's call it that, because I've started a second career since then, and Pistol will probably shortly start a second career as well with a civilian carrier. Yeah, I don't think we regret it, because it was an end of the means. We've gotten to see the good and bad of humanity. We've had the privilege and honor to work with some amazing human beings on multinational, multicultural options as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a great ride.
If there's one thing that I found is as true as the sunrise, it's that I like being on there with Hartzell.
The KC Morning Show.
So at this point, I went and got myself another beverage. John's wife had some dessert for us, which was top notch. Got to make sure I mention that on the show. And they just started telling me stories. It was awesome. And we wrapped with this story that was also pretty incredible. On one of the anniversaries of 9/11, they went to Afghanistan and they flew. And with that, I'll let them finish that story.
Very, very humbling, sobering, very quiet day. It's probably about like right now. What is it? Sun's probably a fist above the horizon. That's about what it was when we left. As it's leading up, we start realizing, hey, dude, what time was the first impact to the World Trade Center? He says it in Zulu. And Zulu time is like universal time. There's no time zone errors. So everybody talks off the same time. He had done all the calculations for what time East Coast time it was when we stepped out the door and when things were happening. So he's calling it out to the second. He's like, it's 4 minutes. 4 minutes until first impact. I'm like, all right, here's my plan. And he goes, 2, which is like the universal standard of, yup, thumbs up, let's do this. If anybody gets my Leroy Jenkins comment, hopefully I get that right. I call the tower and I said, hey, tower, we're looking for a time departure at this second. And they go, why in the world would you want a time departure in Afghanistan in A-10s? And I go, September 11th. It's the exact moment that the first airplane hit the World Trade Center. And it was just like,
Roger.
And he goes, Bagram Tower copies. And I go, okay. And I'll never forget. I know you don't forget. We pull on the runway and we're looking down the runway and it's us. There's nobody else moving on the entire airfield.
Yeah, you talk about a sobering moment. I'm sitting in my jet looking over at Sapper and his, and you're looking at the time frame and where you're sitting and looking at the mountains, the thousands of individuals have gone over there. They know exactly what that looks like. And man, it's burned into your memory. I mean, we sat there until that second hit, and at that second,
we had 2 minutes or so, yeah. two and a half minutes in on the runway. So anybody that's sitting a Southwest whatever airplane, you know, that's a long time to be sitting. And we get to the second, and hog 6-1 yeah. or 6-3 flight cleared for takeoff. And we release brakes.
I'll finish the story here. So we fly out and go through a valley. And we head westbound. We were working northwest Afghanistan for that one. And as we progressed through the mission, we were all audibly honored during that flight, including when we even met up with the tanker. We talked about it with the tanker and what was going on during that day in 2001. And we went up to the northwest and worked and went and did our job and came home and got some photos of it, of flags we got to fly. I think we're going to do something special with a couple of those coming up on 11 September out at Sporting. I mean, that flight, that's, yeah, it was a moment.
I got one more question for you, friends. I'm not going to ask you to make a pitch for the military. I instead want you two to make a pitch for people. I think if there's one thing we've learned in us breaking bread this evening is that we are people first, and at the end of the day, we got to have each other's back. Yeah. You all have our back. What is your pitch for people?
I think for me, it's, you know, what we talked about earlier with following dreams, and Sapper touched on it. But if you take specifically just kind of my life and what I've gone through, having grown up and wanting to follow this dream of aviation and being a fighter pilot, and then making a critical error, bad decision making, got DUI is what happened at a very young age. Looking at that and going, great, I've messed my whole life up. And how you recover from that, and how you recover from what you would call a mistake or a regret, or however somebody wants to categorize categorize something that has affected their life. What you do after that and how you respond to that is what actually is what defines you. It's not the error or the mistake or the regret that defines you. It's how you carry out after that. So I think we talk about pitching or any of that. It's, man, I would encourage anyone out there or any of my friends or anything that when you go through those bumps in the road or you make a bad decision, how you recover from that, what you do with your decisions after that, how you respond to those things or what will guide you. So, I mean, I made an error and had to bounce back. I had to change how I was living life, who my friends were to some extent, had to change my environment. And then I had to work very hard at getting myself back into a position where I could fly again and I could finish school and I could go on to do this. So it's not that I woke up one day and I've had a super easy life. It hasn't been a rough life by any means, certainly if you compare it to some other people, but it's for me internally, I still had to overcome that. And so anybody, I would just say, man, follow your dreams, you know, don't give up on them. Don't say I messed this up and I can't do this now. There's always a way to bounce back. There's always a way to continue forward. Don't ever give up on that stuff. Don't ever quit. Don't quit trying. And the decisions you make after that is actually what will define you, not the mistake.
So I don't want this to come across as I'm trying to be churchy. I know that to me, my faith is a big deal and I should make it even more of a big deal daily. But I take a few passages. The golden rule is a big one that I think that even if you don't believe in the Bible, if you look at the golden rule, if you look at love your neighbor as yourself, that right there will solve a lot of the problems that we're seeing. I don't think, and this is specifically Americans that I'm talking to, I don't think we're as far apart as sometimes it's portrayed in different avenues. I think that if you continually focus on treating people with dignity, respect, loving somebody that you may never have met, because I'm telling you, going to basic training, everybody in that squad bay and that dorm, you wanted the barracks, was from a different walk of life. I was from a small town in Northeast Arkansas. We had dudes from New York City, L.A., had never seen probably like a legit forest. I won't say tree because that's insulting, but like a legit forest. And for the first couple days, there were some legit growing pains because of backgrounds and cultures. But very quickly, you realize that you're all suffering together in the same way and that everybody is exactly the same. I'm talking hours and days. There was no more black, white in between. Everybody were dudes surviving together, surviving drill instructors that were trying to crush you on a daily basis and a minute-by-minute basis. And the only way you're going to get through that is together, and I would say don't give up on people, especially here in the States. Just love each other. Love your neighbor as you would somebody in your own personal close family. Treat them with respect and assume that they don't mean you ill will. Because I think we've gotten away from that in life. Everybody's out to get me and everybody is hating and, you know, and I don't believe it. I don't believe that the American spirit is that negative. And I think that, I think we're not that far apart and we all kind of want the same things. Every parent wants their kids to have a better way at it, better go at life than they had for themselves. You know, we're all working toward one goal in life, and that's living off on the spaceship that's called Earth here, you know? I mean,
I always close my interviews, my shows by saying, you know, it's a good day to be a Kansas Cityan. Let's even expand upon that, boys. Is it a good day to be a Kansas Cityan? Is it also a good day to be an American?
Absolutely one and the same. It's a good day to be an American, but then we can break that down to KC boys. North side, south side. Absolutely. Call yourself the Kansas City Kansan, which is wrong, but we'll let you get away with it because Sporting's out there. East side, Lee Summit boy. I grew up south side, Belton. So it's, we all have our places in KC, and I love this place. I'm a Kansas City boy. I'm a Midwest boy. Friends that went to different high schools all over KC. I love the Sporting cauldron. My brother's out there all the time. I think that, you know, and you look at barbecue, you got Vine Street. There's so many cool places of Kansas City that get tied up together, and we all associate ourselves with different areas of the city, and whether you're a buzz person or a rock person or all these things that bleed together, and at the end of the day, we're all one family, which I love. So it's always a good day to be a Kansas City. But it's also a great day to be an American and to have the freedoms that we have here to be a Kansas Cityan. I love it.
One last cheers. John, Pistol, can we do this all the time?
I believe that we will win, my man.
Oh, boy. Yep.
Yep. America!
ball down the field, boys.
The KC Morning Show.
I think more than anything, I was just sick that last drive. I missed that touchdown throw. That would have gave us a chance to make it where they had to score a touchdown, put our defense in a bad situation. And I thought our defense stepped up in that second half and did a great job. And so I was just happy, man. I was happy that we ended with that block and Leo got through there. And it was just joy after that.
I know you never give up, but what is the mindset as that play's happening? I mean, you're probably pretty worried, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely are, because it's just a low percentage for a block. But, I mean, if anyone's going to do it, I mean, Tobe and his team's going to have a design rush or design way to get to get in the hand on it. So it was obviously, you're obviously worried because it's out of your control. But at the same time, I have trust in my teammates. They're going to go out there and make a play.
Offensively, does it feel like a win?
Yeah, I mean, they all feel like wins. I've learned that any way you win is good in this league. Obviously, there's stuff to learn from. Thought we did good things in good spots. I missed the if I make the touchdown throw to Trav and I make the touchdown throw to Worthy, we're probably in a different situation. So just got to execute in the red zone when you're playing a good defense. And if you make those two throws, we're not relying on the block by Leo.
I think this game was similar on offense to the two against the Broncos last year.
Yeah, I mean, they play extremely hard. They're well coached. They do a good job of mixing coverages, and then they make you execute throughout the entire field. I mean, like I just said, like we had chances. You had that, and you had the one down the sideline, the Worthy that I throw out of bounds. I mean, there's chances, but if you don't hit them, the drive stall out because they continue to play hard. And so you gotta execute and have them execute on those chances in order to beat a good football team. And we didn't do that today, and we got lucky and found a way to get the win in the end, anyways.
Patrick, one thing that Coach said was, proud of you guys for battling. So after a game like this, hard-fought game, you feel good. But knowing that you got Buffalo coming up, where do you put this win in? What needs to be done better to make sure that you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's week to week in this league. I mean, it's I just continue to work on getting better throughout the entire season. We know it's going to be a great challenge this next week. Buffalo's playing great football. They've played great football for a while now, and we understand what it takes to go into an environment like that and have to give everything you have in order to get a win. And we know they'll be fiery, and they're going to be trying to beat us. So we're going to have to play better and execute at a higher level in order to win. But I trust our guys are going to get back to work and have a full week of rest and play our best football going into Buffalo.
Can you take us through the touchdown pass to Trav?
Yeah. I mean, fourth and goal, Coach Reed giving us a chance to get a touchdown. Trav read it right. He kind of had a read type play option on that play, and he got the DB to go outside. He slips a little bit, and then Trav just kind of curls it in there, and I give him the ball, and that was kind of my first read. I had a couple other options there, but when your first read's open, man, you just fire it to him.
Patrick, is there any way to describe what's going through your mind when the celebration begins, like you're just running down the field? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are you saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome, man. You live for these moments. I mean, when you grow up playing football, you live for the walk-off, whatever it is. And it's special when you build these guys for so long and you've built this chemistry with them and guys get to make that play. It's something that I'm sure Leo will have for the rest of his life. But it's I'm just glad that we all get to experience it together.
Just curious.
insecurity about the darkness. Am I good time? Whoa, whoa. Why we just curious? We must feel it.
You're listening to the KC Morning Show.